Randy, one of the things that you talked about today was this idea of changing our perspective on the innovation continuum. Can you tell me what it is that people think it is and then your perspective on it?
I think all I want to do and what I generally try to do, just thinking as a scientist, is to make these ideas more precise. So with precision, when you look at components of the innovation spectrum, for example, basic research, applied research, prototype development, scaling prototypes, doing market analysis and raising capital to create companies, if you can distinguish those, then you can manage which ones to invest in at which time based on where you are in that continuum. So an idea might come from anywhere. It might land within any one of those components within the innovation system, then you have to decide how to exercise all of the other ones to support a whole idea, that is to go from idea to commercial product. So if there's any difference, it's only me seeking a refinement of precision so that I can argue about which components deserve what kind of support at what point in time and at what stage of development.
So what you're saying is you're not necessarily moving in a straight line from discovery to commercialization, but you could start anywhere along that continuum.
In fact, we see things starting everywhere. Many people have told me, well, what's the use of basic research when most ideas that are commercialized come from some entrepreneur or inventor's idea from his garage, and then they get turned into products. The reality is the ideas can come from anywhere, but the expertise to make those ideas sustainable generally comes from basic and applied research, and the making them commercially viable and sustainable comes from continual refinements of market research and adjustments to the products. So you can start anywhere, but you generally need the whole spectrum to make a successful innovative company, and which parts you must invest in changes over time.
Where do you see the gaps? If you use the example of your own expertise with machine learning and all the computer science that we're working on these days, where should we be looking at the opportunities?
Like my boss, Gary Albeck, says, is the value, the extra value to be added if you're trying to improve an innovation system, is at the connection points between those components. That's another reason why I try to be discrete and precise about the different components. So, for example, the interaction between an existing company with a business model, using the business model to drive where to look first in research to improve the value of the business model, means building a connection between the businessman with a small company and the researcher with expertise about what that company has as data, for example.
You used the example of all the emphasis now in the bio industries, right, and then all this data that we're gathering. What's the problem there?
I think that we've built collaborative teams of very clever people in silos that are becoming increasingly isolated. So, for example, the ingenuity of modern health and medical researchers in tackling tough medical problems is simply amazing, but it's becoming more and more disconnected with the information science that's required to support it. That was the issue illustrated with the modern sequencing machinery that's generating so much data so quickly that you need to fill the growing gap between the application scientists, like a medical researcher, and the information scientists, who are the only ones that have any hope of filling that gap. So I think that that's probably one way of thinking about it.
Well, how can we even keep up with all this information that we're generating? We don't even have the people who can actually do it for us.
I guess there are two things true there. One is that we don't have a modern generation of educated graduates who have seen the challenge, who have been educated about the challenge and about the trajectories of modern science that help address the challenge. So that means developing university programs. We heard somebody talk about the jack of all trades. I want to think about the jack of N trades, where N is greater than one. That is, the revival and interest in computer science, for example, has largely been driven by people who want to know about computer science and some other discipline in its role. So biology and computer science is a big interest area. Nanoscience and computer science is a big issue. So I think we need to concentrate on programs to develop the people who understand how to fill the gap. So that's one way to think about it.
So in this time of recession, where should we be investing those dollars?
public dollars can be influenced by governments observing that no matter what they do, none of their attempts have been successful in springing forth more venture capital, for example, in technology. Very little of that has been done, so they can seed it, like Alberta Investment Corporation has been seeded with $100 million. You can seed it and try to improve it, but you can also try to invest some of that in education, which you know, if the programs are designed appropriately, credibly to fill these gaps, will produce over some longer time frame some impact that will in general be sustainable. I think another thing is well, we've always heard that Canada doesn't do so well on commercialization. We invest a lot of money in research. What Canada really hasn't done well is to set policies that encourage the industries to invest in education. So, for example, why would you invest industrial money in education partnerships when the money is already going there and producing what industry needs? So there's at least three different problems there.
Well, how would you solve it?
I think building partnerships between industry and universities for educational programs is a good way to do that. We created this program jointly between science and engineering called Masters of Internet Technology, for example, about 5 years ago. What was the task there? Well, it was to get an interaction between engineering and science to understand next generation internet, and by that create a whole series of graduate students who understood there was more to this than either just hardware for communication or just software for managing it, but application areas that emerged because you put the two together. I would think that the same thing is true of masters of biological analytics, for example, something like that. So you can design those programs, and you can start to find those companies who understand that it is impossible to sustain their current business models without finding those kinds of graduates. A good example is 5 years ago, if you talked to any of the engineering academics who did oil sands extraction and you asked them about metagenomics, I said, no. They are occupied with a trajectory based on steam and pressure and mechanical methods of extracting hydrocarbons. You've already seen in the last year investments in petroleumics and metagenomics to better understand the organisms in the oil sands, for example, and the mechanics of the molecular activities in those things to be able to, one, extract more hydrocarbons at a lower price, and to preserve the environment by understanding how the complexity of that mixture can be ameliorated with, you know, the E. coli eating CO2, for example. So I think that we get company involvement by saying, you don't have a future if you don't invest in these education programs that are multidisciplinary.
One of the questions that came up is that Canada is always behind. Is there something that we can do with, say, the artificial intelligence and the data mining that could put us at the forefront?
The answer is typically yes, because most research areas that have received some funding and focus in Canada have managed to be able to, what's the phrase, is punch above their weight or hit higher than average for what's invested. I think that's true, and that the danger in exploiting that is to say, you've done your work, now we're going to take the money and place it elsewhere to commercialize. I don't know of any researcher who wouldn't want to support a broader spectrum towards application if they thought they were providing value, but I don't also know of anyone who would just give up their research money to an unspecified magic recipe for commercialization. So Canada, in that regard, has always been said to be, oh, you guys produce such excellent research results, but you don't have a clue about how to commercialize them. Mostly that's true when you compare us to Japan, Korea, some parts of the United States, some parts of Europe. But we haven't seemed to have paid attention enough internationally to say, what are they doing that we're not doing, as opposed to try and reinvent it ourselves. So I think we have to look more closely at what works elsewhere.
So where should we be putting the effort? Where could we be experts?
Well, one of the areas that we've seen here is that I've claimed is in data analytics, we've built really good basic foundational work in machine learning, and we're now applying that already. So we're generating outcomes that are practical in some areas from our machine learning research, and it's not shifting along the continuum. It's augmenting our research learning group with people who are interested in adding value in applied areas. I think we can do more of that and build these intersections. So, for example, data analytics with biologists is a natural place to look. Data analytics with energy and environment is another natural place to look. Data analytics with agriculture and forestry is another place to look. In Alberta, we have all of those industries that are eager to add value to their own industries. Generating data and looking for insight into adding value is what that part of it can do. So, I mean, that's the trajectory I see anyway.
Thank you very much, Randy.
You're welcome.